Hey everyone, I'm Megyn Kelly. Welcome to The Megyn Kelly Show. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., born into the Kennedy dynasty and the namesake of one of the most famous men in America. He has been in the spotlight for decades. Many of us grew up seeing the Kennedy family as the closest thing we had to American royalty. The patriarch, Joseph Kennedy, an entrepreneur, ambassador to the UK, and first head of the SEC under President Roosevelt, helming a family of 9 children, one of whom is Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s dad. The names of those children would come to define politics for much of the 20th century as they became war heroes, senators, attorneys general, even a president. Bobby's father was Attorney General Robert Kennedy, assassinated in 1968 while on his way toward becoming the Democratic nominee for president. Bobby was just 14 years old at the time, but years later would go on to follow in his father's legal footsteps, entering the legal profession and becoming one of the nation's top environmental lawyers, leading the charge against various toxins and pollutants and demanding remediation of chemical wastelands like the Hudson River in New York. But it is his position on vaccines that has left him a bit of an outcast in some circles, including with many in the medical community, the media, and even with some of his own family. I spoke to Robert for nearly 4 hours, my longest interview ever. We discussed everything from his position on vaccines and censorship to the claims he makes in his latest book, The Real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the Global War on Democracy and Public Health. The book, essentially blackballed by the media, is nonetheless an enormous hit with the American people, making the bestsellers lists of The New York Times, Amazon, The Wall Street Journal, and USA Today. And while what you're about to hear is not a cheerleading session on vaccines, it is an important conversation about public health, the agencies in charge, and whether we have been getting the protection we deserve from those we fund with our tax dollars. We taped this conversation about a week ago, and we have spent the time since taking a deeper dive into some of his more controversial claims. What you will hear are many of his opinions, along with some context and some fact-checking as we go. We did this because we want our audience to hear this discussion, but to understand where Robert and his critics most differ, and because we hope this exchange can be seen on as many public platforms as possible. We think it's a vital exchange. Also, if you're watching on YouTube or listening on the podcast services, you can find links to other sources like the CDC, the WHO, and so on in our episode description. We've tried to provide you with as many resources as possible. You can make up your own minds. We talked about far more than just vaccines, however. This is, after all, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., including an incredibly revealing conversation about the toll his work has taken on his wife, actress Cheryl Hines, the assassinations of his father and his uncle, and why he thinks the Democratic Party is no longer what they fought so hard to represent. We even went there on Marilyn Monroe and claims about his father and his uncle allegedly having affairs with her. Truly nothing to his credit was off limits. We have divided the interview into two separate shows because clearly there's a lot to cover. In today's show, we dive into vaccines. I asked him point blank how he can claim to be pro-vaccination, which is what he claims, when his words and positions sound far from it. We also look into Dr. Fauci, his career, his finances, and why Kennedy says Fauci is not the hero the media made him into during the COVID pandemic. Watch. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Megyn.
All right, let's start with the Fauci book, because one of the most interesting things about it is how it's been totally blackballed by basically everyone. I mean, it's been a complete media blackout on the book.
We've gone into 12 separate printings, and so we ran out of books a dozen times.
Wow.
And now they have plenty of books.
Wow. And Bobby, if we can, just to remind folks, your voice is a little raspy, and there's a reason for that, just so people aren't distracted. And would you care to share the reason for that?
Yeah, I apologize to that, particularly to your listeners and to you, because my voice is really hard to listen to. I had a very, very, like, unusually strong voice until I was 42 years old, 1996, 1997. I was struck with this condition, which is called spasmodic dystonia. My throat, actually, if you scoped my throat, it would look like a very, very healthy throat. But I have a neurological condition. So my brain is instructing my voice box to tighten up. And for some reason that nobody really understands, it goes in and out. So some days my voice is pretty strong, and other days it's very staggered and kind of difficult to listen to. And today is not a good day for my voice. So again, I apologize to you.
Not at all. I'm sorry to even raise it.
You know what? Whenever I give a speech, Megan, I'll always explain it to people because, it is, I can't listen to myself. I have never listened to my own podcast. I don't listen to myself on TV or radio because it's disturbing for me to hear my voice. So I feel sorry for people who need to listen to it. And I feel like it helps me to give them an explanation.
You're worth it. You're worth it. And, you know, I was thinking about it as I was reading about your condition, thinking it's a particularly cruel thing to have handed to you, right? I mean, it's quite literally the loss of your voice, right? It's to have your actual voice diminished in any way or interfered with must be galling, must be frustrating. I don't know. How has that felt to have that deteriorate?
Well, you know, it's definitely a paradox or an irony because so much of what I do is depend on my voice as an attorney, as a public speaker, as, you know, somebody who is a voice now kind of for the movement that, you know, I have this particular disability. But, you know, I think there's people who have a lot worse disabilities than me. I have a cousin who lost a leg when he was 11 years old. My family has been around people, you know, working on disabilities for many, many years. So I've never spent even a second feeling sorry for myself or, you know, it's just something that God gave me. Mm-hmm. I have to figure out why is this a gift? Why has this challenge been given to me? And that's, you know, and then to do the best I can with it and not be deterred by it. It's not something I would complain about.
Well, the patriarch of the Kennedy family, Joseph Kennedy, the man with whom it all started, and that's your grandpa, Bobby Kennedy's dad, Jack Kennedy's dad. As I understand it, he wasn't so big on whiners. And so you were all raised from the cradle to toughen up and not walk around feeling woe is me.
Yeah, I think that's right. He would, if you whined around him, he would come into the house clapping his hands, said there are no whiners in this house. There's no complaining in this house. And, you know, we were reminded growing up time after time that we were very, very fortunate. Compared to 99% of humanity, we had a very, very cushy existence, and, you know, none of us really had a right to complain about anything. And I, you know, I think it's a better way to live to just say you're not going to complain. I think self-pity is crippling to people.
Yes. I mean, coming from that kind of an upbringing and family approach to life, today's day and age must be very frustrating to you. I'm sure your grandfather would be horrified to see how much we lean into victimhood today, whether actual or imagined. It's become something we prize. It's celebrated. It's no longer something to triumph over. It's more like, great, you've got something to complain about. We all want to hear it.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that anybody ever got to their deathbed and said, you know, I wish I had spent more time complaining. I think there's one of